KCSB FM Santa Barbara 91.9. KCSB News presents Inside Isla Vista, a weekly show covering an array of issues of interest to the Isla Vista community. The goal of the show is to educate, inform, and raise awareness about what's happening in Isla Vista. It does not endorse or support any political candidates or causes. There's a different host each week. Let's meet tonight's hosts on Inside Isla Vista.
I'm your very different host. My name is Dick Flax, Professor Emeritus at UCSB. And every month or so, I come on this wonderful series, thanks to Lisa Osborne and her initiative in creating it. And tonight we have a very special program because the guest is DJ Palladino. Hi, DJ.
Hi, Dick. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, I couldn't avoid it because you're in the news constantly now. First of all, there was a story. I mean, DJ is an entrepreneur of culture, let me put it that way.
Oh, that's nice.
And an author of culture and of important things. And so, first of all, there was the story, and this is not exactly Isla Vista related, but maybe it is. DJ and his wife, partner, have opened a tiny bookstore, or reopened, a Mesa bookstore out on the Mesa in Santa Barbara, a very quixotic thing, and I guess Don Quixote is probably one of the books to open a bookstore.
It doesn't sell very well, even in the new
but
in our local
bookstore. Is the store doing okay?
The store is doing great, and it's, you know, I can't tell you how many times a day someone from the neighborhood comes in and gives me a big hug and thanks me for keeping
it going. Well, that's great that people in the neighborhood care about the bookstore. Yeah. So that's up there near Lazy Acres.
It's across the street from Lazy Acres. It's in between the Taco Bell and the Rose Cafe, which I think is a metaphor, but I'm not sure what of.
So then comes news that DJ has published his first novel. And I keep forgetting the name.
I should have.
Nothing That Is Ours. That's the name of the book. Uh-huh. It's already hit Amazon. You can get it on Kindle. I've done that. And so we're going to talk a little about that because it's so infused with the history of this region. But it's a novel. It's a thriller. But the justification for having DJ a guest here on Inside Isla Vista is that he is a key figure for the last almost 15 years, I think, in the bringing of or the revival of and the maintenance of a cultural scene in the Isla Vista communities. The director of the Magic Lantern film program in the Isla Vista Theater, and other activities as well that we will get into. But let's talk about the novel first, because as soon as you open it, you realize that it is very infused with this almost step-by-step, foot-by-foot description of Santa Barbara, the city, back in what year? Late 1950s?
It begins in 1958 and crosses into 1959, where the whole novel takes place in about a month.
And there's a leading character who is a very young writer, if I'm not mistaken.
Isn't it? That's right.
And he encounters a literary, you might say, scene, including most famously Aldous Huxley. Now, how does Aldous Huxley get in there?
Well, you know, Huxley was one of the real impetuses for the impeti for the book. When I discovered that Huxley had come here in 1959 to UCSB, he was the first guest professor and gave a series of lectures that were absolutely mind-blowingly well attended by Santa Barbara. They had to rig speakers outside the hall so Huxley could hold forth on such issues as pollution, overpopulation, foreign entanglements. He talked about the efficacy of taking psychedelic drugs. And all of this happened 10 years before when I came along in 1969, and that was the stew that I came up in. And I was just dazzled by the whole thing.
And Huxley then, did he live here after that?
He did not. Well, he lived here from time to time in Isla Vista. There's a house that's supposedly he and his wife stayed in. He usually when he came, and then when he was here for his series of lectures, he stayed at the Upham Hotel, which he called the dear old Upham.
Uh-huh.
And the Upham Hotel, which
is kind of an English kind of place, right?
Very, very much nice. And it's old, old, old. I mean, it's as old as the pier. It was built the same year as Stern's Wharf, and it was as old as some of the famous hotels that burned down and were destroyed in the early years. So he
so, so if it. You read Brave New World and remember it, you remember something called Soma.
That's right.
And then it hits you when you think about this history, connecting to our locale, that he was for a long time fascinated with psychedelic drugs.
Right, and it's a crux in the story too, because the main character who is involved in a mystery, there's a dead body in the harbor that leads him on and on and into different aspects of the city. Stumbles into Huxley, who he's asked to interview for the Los Angeles Times, even though Huxley really lived in Los Angeles and he was not obtainable there, apparently. Where he runs into him at a party, and somebody at the party who's hanging on to the Huxley mystique passes Trevor Weston three hits of psilocybin, which he takes later. And I thought it was a nice kind of, you know, surrealistic tinge or spin on usually the detective gets drunk at some point or gets hit over the head and goes spinning down into, and I thought that this was a probably very nice way of countering that.
Well, and also from a historical point of view, maybe I'm overstating what your underlying intentions were, but you're bringing together the 50s in right into the 60s in that scene. And so psychedelics hits Trevor, but also hits the community.
Hits the community in a big way, and it changes everything. And really, that's true. Besides the thriller aspect of the book, I was very concerned with the, and very interested in the cusp. We're in the 50s, turned into the 60s. And also because of something that that really I sat down to write about was this thing called Castle Rock, which was a rock, a kind of an outcropping rock that existed in the early Santa Barbara history and was blown up by the city in 1926, a year after the earthquake, in order to make way for the harbor. And when I first sat down to write, I thought I was going to write a novel about Castle Rock. And I was going to set it in the earthquake, and the blowing up the rock was going to be the coda. But like you hear novelists say, and I never really believed it then, this novel took over. But it also enabled me to go with the change in consciousness that would allow a group of people to blow up a big monument in order to build something else, the sort of sense that man must have dominion over the fish and the earth, to something that would be unheard of. By the time I was a teenager, no one would have done something like that. They were, you know. So it was definitely was a change. The psychedelics are a part of it.
And your characters include famous developers of what Santa Barbara is, including Pearl Chase.
That's right.
Who is portrayed as a relative of the main character.
She's a pseudo-relative and aunt.
She's quite a character there.
And
is Tom Stork in the book?
T.M. Stork is in the book. He ghosts through its pages, and we don't know exactly what happens, but he becomes a kind of scary father figure to Trevor later on in the book. And I don't want to spoil it too much. But.
So both Chase and Stork were both preservers of the quality of life of Santa Barbara. They were very vociferous on that point. But also they, especially Stork, invented the idea that what was here already needed to be displaced by other visions.
Absolutely.
Right?
He built Lake Kachuma, which was called Stork's Folly for the first 6 or 7 years after it was built, because they had a drought, which Santa Barbara is famous for. And when the drought ended and the rain came, and the lake was filled, Isla Vista was born. You know, the development of Goleta and Ivy and all around here was precipitated by Stork's Folly.
Yes, and the very placement of the campus where it is, and therefore Isla Vista, was his doing.
Right.
He was a member of the board of regents, and they moved the campus down here.
And I should say we're sitting beneath Stork Tower right
now. We're right in Stork Tower.
Right, you could just fall on top of us.
Stork.
Yeah.
So all of this history is sort of opened up in this... somebody compared you to Pynchon. I don't think that's fair to you.
I'm gonna cop to it. I'm gonna say yes because a couple of people talked about the way that Chandler becomes Pynchon in
really?
The book,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm not. I was very self-consciously using the almost like in a parody way, using those voices that I hoped that I and I was. I was kind of gratified. I mean, people are accusing me of copying something, but it was actually something I set out to do.
Well, the other voice along these lines would be Ross MacDonald, whose work is set at the same time, that period that your book includes, that time. And he had a very detailed interest in Santa Teresa, which is Santa Barbara, changes the names. You don't.
Right.
You don't change any names.
There
are real people in this book who might, I don't know if any of them are living, but they're turning over in their graves.
There's a few that are alive, and I talked to them all. And
I see them.
They didn't seem to be too perturbed about it.
Everyone loves
the dead ones are turning over in their graves.
That's
I told you earlier, I wanted to make Pearl Chase a vampire in the book, but... There were too many daytime scenes, and so I couldn't.
So you don't see her as a very good figure?
Oh, I do see her as a very good figure. But I think that I would be horrified if I knew her because she was famous for midnight hectoring phone calls where she got people to do what she wanted them to do, and not with a velvet glove, but with a cudgel on a velvet glove. And that comes out in the book. And also, I should mention very quickly, is that she and Stork fought.
Oh.
Well, Stork didn't really want the prettification of Santa Barbara that she wanted.
He was more growth-oriented.
He wanted the city to look, you know, whatever way it looked so that businesses could and real estate could bloom. And she wanted, you know, this very much this vision of, and she won. You know, she won in the end.
And maybe he eventually came to see that part of the business value of Santa Barbara was the very natural environment, you know. But the newspaper, Harvey Mollich famously wrote about the fact that a newspaper like the News Press is at the heart of what he called the growth machine because that's where all the revenue growth of newspaper comes from is the business growth of the community. So that fits. So listen, so Isla Vista. So, and you went to school here. You were
an English major
and some
in the
80s of our teachers get into this book. In some way or
I don't think I actually took a class from any of the people that I put into the book. But, I did take a class from Larry Wilson.
There.
That's right. He is there, yeah.
So, and that's not the first novel where the English department plays a role. Did you know that?
I did not.
The well-known novelist Richard Stern spent a year here in the late 50s. I don't know the name of the book, but he wrote a fictional academic novel of type depiction of he called it the music department, but it was all the knives were out and the bodies floating bloodily as the English, in the real English department.
I may have been more inhibited if I'd known about that book.
You've had connections to this place ever since early 70s.
My parents moved here in the late 60s, and I went to Catholic school. I went to Bishop High School. And I was obsessed with the city. It was such a big change from the San Fernando Valley. I just, you know, I didn't really know anybody here, and I came here. It was like a conversion experience, and I just fell in love with the city. And I started learning about history in... We used to get up in the morning and have breakfast, and there would be Walker Tompkins on the radio. Who's also a character in the book later on. His nickname was Two Guns, by the way. I'm giving away something in the story. And so, yes, and then I came to, the first time I came to Isla Vista was 1968, And it was a
So what were you, 10, 12 years old?
No, in 68. Okay. In 68, I was like 15 or 16, I think it was, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderland. I mean, you know, it was just, we came out here because of all the kinds of things we thought we could explore as high school kids, and they were all there and more. And the city was a culturally rich city in those days, too. You know, there was the Magic Lantern Theater that we'll talk about later, that I went to movies there all the time. Across the street was Borsodi's, which was one of the few places you could go if you were a teenager in Santa Barbara and stay out late. You could stay there till 3-4 in the morning, and then, you know, you would have to drive home past the police. But
so that was a coffee house.
Yes.
And like a folk club, right?
Music. Right. There was music.
Acoustic music, basically.
There was music. There was even, I believe, the Santa Barbara Chamber Orchestra started playing in Borsodi's in the late 60s. But maybe it was the early 70s.
And the Borsodi's were well-known beyond Santa Barbara as anarchist thinkers, right? I think they published in that.
Yeah. I did not know that.
So that was you're right. Yeah. Between the, you know, in a certain sense, it's been downhill, right? Because you had this art theater called the Magic Lantern,
right?
And you had this. You even had a bookstore, believe it or not.
We have two bookstores. Yeah,
and the coffee house
and three record stores.
And
and then the Pardal was a parade of, you know, hippie kids going in and out of arts and crafts stores that were there. It was beautiful.
This is late 60s and then into the 70s.
And then, you know, it survived into past the riots, and it survived past the sort of breaking up. But by the 80s, it had become relatively sterile, I'd have to say. I mean, well, the sort of like the pot pipe was replaced by the keg. You know, the world of, and sadly, culture went downhill. There was a lot of stuff going on at the university. There were, you know, there were concerts, there were, you know, arts and lectures and things. But IV itself was less and less a place where kids could go and do
except
it.
For music, right? So one of the things that motivated my invitation today was that, and we're talking here on the Inside Isla Vista program, I waited too long to remind you that that was the case. And we're talking to DJ Palladino, author of the new novel, whose name I always forget. And
Nothing That Is Ours.
Nothing That Is Ours. And he and we're talking also about Isla Vista more than that, because he's had a life here and he's a kind of cultural entrepreneur in our community that's because we're talking about now, as we were just finishing saying, the decline of the sort of indigenous cultural life of the late 60s, early 70s. But then at some point, and it was really after the first mass murders in Isla Vista by David Attias, that some faculty led by Catherine Cole, theater professor, decided to engage in Isla Vista with a cultural program that would encourage participation by students in creative activity, and as well as a film program, and that's where you come in.
And the idea was really to jumpstart culture. Like, that was what Catherine used to say, and we always thought, well, we're providing it, but we also were secretly giving people nudges. So a couple of students, Chris Zawicki and Christy Julin, had started a film series in IV, in the IV Theater, which was called the Magic Lantern Theater back in the day, and was bought by the university from the people who owned the Magic Lantern. And their first film was a remarkable thing. They showed Tron and The Big Lebowski, and Jeff Bridges came.
Oh.
And they had a huge turnout, as you might expect. And they both graduated the next year. And when they graduated, and I was there for that night, it was fantastic. When they graduated, my brother, who works in the film department, asked me if I would head it up for a couple of months and see if I, you know, until some students step forward to take over the mighty yoke of programming the theater. And I did, but it went on and on, and it's been 13 years now, and it's evolved into a job. And the job has evolved into a class in the film studies department. And we, you know, we show film every Friday and Monday night. We show films that... What I learned about programming movies in the time from when I first lost a lot of money in the first year that I did it to now when we're doing quite well is that you program things that you think people will come to rather than the things that you like.
What a brilliant insight.
Yeah, I know. Took me a long time.
Well, especially if you have to generate... let's say, a profit, or at least pay for
it. Right, and we wanted to generate a profit, but we also wanted to fill the theater so it looked good, and it was a safe place for people who didn't want to go to a kegger, you know, and none of us are like, you know, anti-kegger or anything. My son once came up with a motto for a Magic Lantern Theater, and which we never used, but it was, Magic Lantern Theater, you can always drink afterwards.
That's good.
We didn't use it, though.
So, but that's okay. That's a point worth dwelling on for a moment. So that whenever there's a serious crisis in Isla Vista of disorder, you might say, part of the diagnosis is the lack of a sense of community and the sort of drifting of students into this party scene that is mindless and has little, and that can breed even violence and so forth. So that presumably is part of what motivated Catherine Cole and the others to say, well, we... And there's a long history of university neglect of engagement with Isla Vista, both in terms of institutional resources, but also even faculty interest in the place.
And let me say that the chancellor and the executive vice chancellor at the time jumped right in once Magic Lantern. They saw the value in it and in some other programs that I can't neglect. It's Ivy Live, which happens on the same night, and Word Magazine, which came along a little later, and a couple of other programs. They came in and supported us. It was
And still do, right? Financial base.
Still do it. Every year, gets a little bit creaky, and we hope that they still love us, and they still give us money.
You told me earlier, before we got on the air, that the films generate some income that can go into these other activities. That's incredibly good news.
Yeah, they do. And this year has been a very good year. Last quarter, I think we had the biggest quarter we've ever had, and this quarter's going along very well, too.
And we, you know, might as well. By the way, this is Inside Isla Vista program. I'm Dick Flax, your host. We're interviewing, not interviewing, we're talking and conversing with our friend DJ Palladino, eminent novelist and cultural entrepreneur. And this Friday, you're sponsoring at the Magic Lantern a film festival.
It's our first ever. You know, you would think we would have done something like that beforehand, but we've been so busy with other things. And there are other film festivals, including the Real Loud show that my brother has had major influence on putting together. The students actually do it. Mm-hmm. But I have an assistant. Her name is Quinn Benson Yates, and she said she wanted to do it, and my assistant does things that she wants to do, and I let her go, and I didn't know whether...
So what is this free event going to
consist of? It will be at least 12 short films. The only sort of restriction on the films was that they'd be no longer than 20 minutes. Mm. And we didn't know whether we were going to fill 2 hours or not at the beginning. We had never done it before, and we actually had to reject 5 films, which sounds horrible, but actually is good news, which means that some critical selection was involved. and
that is good news.
Yeah, and we're very excited about it. I have no idea. I'm letting the students and Quinn are doing it all. I'm just going to come and watch, enjoy the show. The following week, we're doing another experiment, which is quite different. We're going to do our first ever Harry Potter film marathon. And that's 8 movies in a row, and it starts at 7 in the evening, and it ends about 5:30 in the evening the following day. And we've got a lot of buzz about that, and we're really excited. We hope we can fill a theater with a bunch of sleepless kids who are, you know, interested.
This is before they have to study for finals.
That's right.
Instead of finals?
No, that comes later. We try and trick them out of studying later on.
If you wanted to participate, come to the marathon, What does it cost you?
$4 for eight movies.
$4 for eight
movies. Eight movies.
But you bring your own food?
We're going to try and get food trucks. There's lots of food in Isla Vista at odd hours. You can go out and get a burrito at 3 in the morning, but we're going to try and get some food there. We haven't worked out all the details yet.
Well, that will be fascinating even just to visually see happens.
I know. I'm a big Harry Potter fan, and I'm looking forward to it. I may not stay awake. I'm old. I may not stay awake for eight times
in a row. I hope
you
don't. I mean, that would not be good. So you've had things like, you told me that your trick of scheduling or your kind of best bet are what you called airplane films.
That's right.
Can I explain that?
That's right. Those are the films that are no longer in the movie theaters, and they haven't yet been released to home video, but you're likely to see them if you take a plane right now. There would be the selection of films that, and those films really draw well. People want either, and then within that we're picky. So we showed Get Out, which was this tremendous movie.
Did that have a big turnout?
It had a huge turnout. We had 800 people come to that.
Wow,
to that
that's
film.
Incredible. Yeah. The buzz around that film is amazing.
Yeah, well, the buzz was, and the turnout was equal to the buzz, and everybody was very excited during the movie. You get all this, audience participation, screaming
that's
along
great.
When the white people are killed, and I shouldn't have let that go.
It's a
great film, and Disney films suddenly are all the rage. We packed the theater with movies like Moana, Zootopia. We had 1,400 people show up for Moana last quarter. And they're very, very proud of how many people come to the films. There are films that we show. I'll throw in an art film that I don't care if nobody comes to see it. I'm going to show it.
What was the last one?
Well, 20th Century Women, which was this great Mike Mills movie, which is also set in Santa Barbara.
Yes. In fact, it's another... If you wanted to figure out the history of our recent past, read your book. Go to see Mike Mills' film.
That's excellent advice, Dick.
Yeah.
I think that's right. You don't have to read any dumb history books. You're going to get it all.
That's very good. I'm looking at your poster, and it says, there's a website, magiclanterniv.com, magiclanterniv, one word, .com, where you can get the information about all of these things. Really? Our director tells me we're almost running out of time, so I'll make one other pitch for your work, which is this article I started to mention in the UCSB Alumni Magazine about the bands of Isla Vista. Maybe we need to do another program just on that topic where we listen to some of the music.
I'd love to do that.
We could do that on my other show, which is the Culture of Protest, Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. We've had some of those bands over the 35 years I've been on the air. A good time for doing that might be on the 35th anniversary of the show toward the end of June.
I would be very honored
We're going to look into that. So my guest, DJ Palladino, get his book. Title, I don't remember.
Nothing That Is Ours. And you can get it at Earthling. You can get it at, not Earthling.
You can get it at Amazon.
You can get it at Chaucer's. You can get it at my bookstore, Mesa Bookstore.
Right.
And
Mesa Bookstore.
Mesa Bookstore, my lovely...
Across the street from Flazy Acres. This has been Inside Isla Vista. Thanks to Lisa Osborne for everything. And tune in tomorrow for my show, Thursday, 6 p.m., Culture Protest. Stay tuned for whatever else is happening next.